This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 72 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we today?
Hi, David. I'm great. We've got an all-news episode this time. No guest, but I think we have some interesting items to discuss.
We have a holiday theme, so like any good sitcom, we're broadcasting our holiday show like 2 weeks before the holiday. But I think we'll get started. We've got a new civilian HAL, you know, high altitude, long endurance. We've got the 12 days of drones. When you get your drone for Christmas, where can you fly it? And from your grounded files, a kiss under the mistletoe that turned a bit dangerous. Near misses, and I have them in air quotes. And a holiday video of the week. So I guess we better get our bells jingling and get started.
Let's go, David.
Our first article tonight was from Unmanned Systems Technology. Arca Space announces a new range of high-altitude UAVs. New Mexico-based Arca Space Corporation announced their Air Strato line of electric UAVs.
These Air Stratos, they say, will be able to fly almost twice as high as a commercial airliner. That gives them the H part of the HAL designation. They're also electric and can be controlled from any part of the world via either a satellite or a GSM communication over the internet.
And it's got a catapult takeoff and arrestor landing system, so it can take off and land from anywhere. To quote the article, it says, "The product fills a huge gap between expensive, large, military unmanned aerial vehicles and less expensive, small-scale civilian commercial drones by combining the performance of the former with the price of the latter. This will allow small-scale businesses, research institutions, and even individuals to benefit from an affordable, high-performance aerial robot." What I thought was interesting about that comment, Max, the first time I read it was, they're large unmanned aerial vehicles, but they're small civilian drones. It's an interesting language tone there.
Yeah, they're not all that small, but they are relatively inexpensive for the capabilities, or at least the capabilities that they expect to deliver. There's two models. There's the Explorer and the Pioneer. And the Explorer is the highest altitude version. They say that will run at prices starting at about $140,000. But this thing has a flight ceiling of 60,000 feet using solar cells and batteries, or 13,000 feet using a hybrid propulsion with a power generator and batteries. But high endurance, almost a full day endurance. Now, they say that model, the Explorer, is currently being tested, and they expect production to start in August of next year, 2015. But they have another model as well that's not as expensive.
Yeah, that would be the Pioneer. It's starting at $80,000. It's a smaller version with lower altitudes with a max of 26,000 feet flight ceiling using the solar cells and batteries, or 13,000 feet using hybrid propulsion with power generator. This is under test, and it's supposed to begin production in May of 2015. So they really are close to getting these out in the field, which is kind of impressive. There's two other accessories that they've marketed, which is the Accelerator, which is $20,000, which is a pneumatic launcher for Pioneer and Explorer, which basically it's a giant catapult for them to, so you can launch it from anywhere. You don't need a runway to take these off with.
And then there's the other option, the other accessory, which is called Interface. And that's the communications setup. that allows you to communicate with those two models via satellite. It gives you a view of flight parameters, allows you to program the autopilot, control the aircraft using inertial stabilization or in full manual mode, and it lets you activate or deactivate subsystems and even interact with your payload. And the interface is projected to go for $15,000. So I think the sort of the basic concept here, David, is pretty fascinating. It's taking capabilities that really are not available commercially and providing them at a reasonable price point to the commercial marketplace. I hope they're successful at this. As we say, they're testing these craft now. This would certainly be something that'll be fun and interesting to watch and follow along.
Yeah, I kind of like the Hales concepts, you know, and everything they're trying to do to get the high altitudes and the long endurance. That's Global Hawks. I find fascinating, that genre of aircraft, you know, things that are going to stay off for multiple days, you know, and at altitudes that we only Clarence Kelly Johnson could imagine. I like this group of UAVs and UASs, so hopefully they'll do well, and maybe they'll make our 12 Drones of Christmas 2015 list, but we've got the 2014 list currently. And this was from flightbots.com, and they picked their favorite drones for the holiday season. I don't think these were in any particular order, were they?
No, we start out with some small ones. In fact, a very small quadcopter, the Q4 Nano. This is an extremely tiny, ready-to-fly quadcopter. It gives you about 5 minutes worth of flight times. And as flightbots.com says, it's recommended for flying in the dark because it has bright LEDs and they can light up the room like a Christmas tree.
The next one was the Hubsan X4 HD, and that's $65. They just basically said that that was a great low-cost little starter quadcopter with a high-definition 2-megapixel camera.
And number three in the list is another Hubsan. It's the X4 H107D. It's first-person view. It's about $173. It's an out-of-the-box first-person view starter drone, in effect, and that's at a pretty good price to get into FPV.
The next one would be a starter drone for aerial photography, which is the Blade 180 QX HD, and that's also an RTF, and that's sitting at $190.
And I think no list would be complete without number five here. That's the Parrot AR Drone 2.0 Elite that lets you control the drone from your smartphone or tablet. I think there's some different prices depending on what you get there. I believe they generally start for around $666. I don't know, David. It sounds like the devil's quadcopter. That's probably not what they meant.
Yeah. But I don't know about that. But let's talk about the next one, which is the Quantum. Q-U-A-N-U-M, not Quantum, but Quantum, Nova, and this is at $360. Rebranded by Hobby King, originally it was called the CX-20 Auto Pathfinder by Cheerson, and they say that this outperforms any drone for its price point. So that would be one if you're looking for a high-performance drone at a reasonable price. $400 seems pretty reasonable.
Yes, it does. Moving up the price scale a bit, there's the Waqara QRX350 Pro. This is also a ready-to-fly FPV quadcopter. And they say it generally costs less than most DJI drones that offer similar product features. So that's one to think about if you're kind of attracted to the DJI Phantom.
Which, surprisingly, comes up next.
Yes, it does.
Which is the Phantom Vision 2, which... Or this is actually the DJI Phantom Vision 2 Plus. Okay, DJI, you can stop adding words to the list end of your vehicles. $1,100. We don't need to talk about this when we talk about it every week. So let's move on to the next one.
Next comes from 3D Robotics. This is the Iris Plus, coming in at $750. And this has sort of the great knowledge and experience of do-it-yourself-drones.com, DIYdrones.com. And also it mentions the financial backing of Richard Branson. That was interesting. They say there's no better platform on the market if you really want to fulfill real drone applications for consumer and professional missions.
And then we've got the X8 Plus drone 3DR powerhouse octocopter at $1,350. I think this is the first octo we've got come across. Powerful workhorse built with quality components, modular design and payload capacity, and autonomous delivery capabilities at an affordable price. Ah, it's the Amazon drone. You can deliver your pizzas down the street.
And coming in at number 11 is the Waukera Scout X4 drone, $1,600. Another quadcopter, and this has a lot of features, including the ability to change from a four-motor quadcopter to an eight-motor octocopter. It's got real-time telemetry and long flight times, up to 25 minutes.
And last but not least, the DJI Inspire 1 at the $3,400. Carbon fiber arms lifted out of sight, 360 view, 4K video, 12 megapixel photos, and everything else that goes with everybody's dream quadcopter, which is the Inspire 1. I don't know. We'll have to see what DJI comes up with the Inspire 1 plus Thursday flight, to, you know, which will be the next title by them. But I have one supplemental one. I just got a text message from the wife of the house, and she thinks we should buy the Disney Flutterby Fairies Magic Flying Tinkerbell at a whopping $11.97. She sent me the email saying it's a UAV tink. So I thought that was perfect timing. So there's your baker's dozen for the 12 drones of Christmas.
Very good. Now, this is from, as we said, as David said, from flightbots.com. But where we first found this was on something called Drone RSS. And this is kind of an interesting site, interesting web page. What they do is take the feeds, RSS feeds, if you're technical about it, from a lot of different UAV-related sources and shows the current episode, current post, if it's a blog, whatever it is, on this one page. Very, very interesting. Puts a lot of information in one place. And that's at drone-rss.com. So if you haven't seen that, you can take a look.
So it's Christmas morning and you got your drone. Now, where can you fly it or where you can't fly it? This was from bbc.com. And where you can and can't fly a drone. And this is a really fairly comprehensive article about the differences between Great Britain and the United States and similarities. The rules in the UK start off with was line of sight, generally measured as 500 meters or 1,640 feet horizontally or 400 feet, 122 meters vertically. A UAV fitted with a camera must always be flown at least 50 meters distance away from a person, vehicle, building, or structure, and not within 150 meters of a congested area, large group of people, such as a sporting event or concert. And for commercial purposes, operators must have permission to fly a drone from the CAA. So at least they have rules, I guess, Max?
But they still have the problem that we see in the U.S. where we don't really have rules, and that being that people are just oftentimes using drones as they see fit. In the UK, the rules are being flaunted. In the US, the guidelines, the policies, let's say, from the FAA are being flaunted. Ample evidence of both. All you have to do is look in YouTube. The article mentions that the CAA has prosecuted two operators over safety. Again, same kind of prime objective that the FAA has, and they have four investigations that are pending. So again, we see, you know, a large number of people, as we say, flaunting the rules. In a couple of cases, you know, some consequence from the regulatory agency, but still, a lot of people doing, you know, a lot of things that aren't always very safe.
back in the day when my wife was a college professor, and she'd have a paper that was plagiarized and be getting very upset, I used to ask her, well, was the student dumb or stupid? Now, what that meant was the student not getting how to properly document it and really wasn't trying to plagiarize, or were they stupid, meaning they were downright plagiarizing? And I think we had the UAVs is another universe where that sort of logic applies. We have people who don't know any better who are flying them. A current lovely argument for our co-host on Airplane Geeks, Rob Mark. And we have people who do know the rules and are overtly going against them. So it's going to be a struggle over the next year, folks, you know, and we're rounding down to it's 3 weeks. And as we're talking tonight, there's a good chance that the government here in the States might shut down. So we'll see where that goes. And then we've got people doing really stupid things. And the next that leads us into our next article, which is from our Grounded files, mistletoe drones. Nothing good could have come out of this. Is one of those where people were like, I don't know what you were thinking.
This is from Gizmodo, and there are a number of articles on this topic, too. This one is titled, TGI Friday's Dumb Mistletoe Drone Cuts Someone's Face Open. Oh, my gosh. Well, I think everybody has heard by now that the restaurant had this idea where they would have drones inside the restaurant carrying mistletoe around and hovering over patrons to, encourage some kissing to go on. And not only does that, well,
you can't even describe this with a straight face. It's like, what were they thinking?
Exactly. Well, they were doing a demonstration for the Brooklyn Daily at one of the stores. And during the course of this demonstration, the pilot of one of these things actually encouraged the reporter to let him land the drone on her hand. And he did that, but she flinched. And when she flinched, the drone was knocked away and went into the face of a photographer covering this that was standing by. And he was injured.
Yeah, nothing good came of this. Okay, we're flying drones in stores. We're flying drones inside a crowded restaurant. We're flying drones with a thing hanging underneath it, and then the pilot of the drone is dumb enough to suggest he wants to land it in somebody's. I realize his piloting skill probably was pretty good, and it really was the reporter's flinching that caused the problem. But this is one of those, folks, don't do this at home. And you know it's bad when we get it from Australia three times in one day, and this has occurred here in the United States. So again, I don't know what else to say about this other than...
Well, also, David, it's another example of someone doing something stupid or something unsafe, let's say, that gives the whole industry a bad name. In one of the articles on this, I sort of scanned through the comments, and there was a comment post from somebody who called himself Drones Need to Be Banned. And his comment or her comment was, these are proving to be a danger to the public. Well, the drone's not the danger to the public. It's unsafe behavior that's of danger to the public. But in the, you know, in the press, in the public eye, it gets painted across the entire class of aircraft that we call drones or UAVs or whatever you want to call them. I think that again, it's another example of how this kind of thing doesn't help at all and, in fact, hurts us a lot.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's talk about more bad behavior. It seems to be a good suggestion here. And this is Pilots Fear Private Drones After Heathrow Near Miss. And this was from thetimes.co.uk. And the UK Approx Board, the UKAB, is supposed to release its report in December 12th, which I guess would be our release date, about the Heathrow Airport incident earlier this year when an Airbus A320 with passengers had a close encounter with a civilian drone.
Yeah, apparently the report has been obtained by the Sunday Times before it's made public. And it talks about how a pilot of the Airbus A320 spotted this drone, some kind of a civilian drone, while he was flying at 700 feet. And, you know, this thing didn't show up on air traffic control, as you might expect. And they never did figure out who the owner of this drone was. It's interesting, though, David, that the AirProx board, the UKAB, which does investigate all airborne near misses there, they have a scale of categories in terms of a risk rating. And they did rate this as a risk rating of A, which is the highest of these five categories of risk. So clearly the AirProx board is taking this very, very seriously, giving it its highest risk rating. And there's not too much information about the report. I think when it's actually released, we'll have some more information and be particularly interested in what conclusions or recommendations come out of it, if any. We have seen some other investigations where the outcome or the conclusions have been, well, yep, that's what happened, and, well, there's not much we can do about it at this point in time, so... I'm curious to see if that's the same approach that the UKAB takes.
Yeah, well, let's look at the FAA. And this is from the WashingtonPost.com. Not a real good friend to UAVs. We tend to have a lot of stories from Washington Post that are negative UAVs. Reports of near collisions between unmanned and manned aircraft continue to be reported to the FAA by commercial pilots, private pilots, and air traffic controllers. Since June 1st, there have been 25 such encounters of small drones coming within, quote, a few feet, few seconds or a few feet of crashing into a much larger aircraft, unquote.
Yeah, and these have been occurring to a large extent at really busy airports like what you find around New York and at Washington, and typically during takeoffs and landings. The report on this data comes from the FAA. And that's because the Washington Post and some others had a records request put in. Before this, the FAA, according to this article, had really only disclosed one near collision. And now we have some detailed data on a large number of them, on 25. And they make interesting reading. We have a list of the 25 near mid-air collisions with drones from the Washington Post. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes. But, you know, it really spans the spectrum. One example, JetBlue flight. This was flight 1572, which was an Airbus A319 into LaGuardia. They reported a suspected small drone that flew under the nose of the aircraft while between 1,500 and 2,000 feet. Another was an Air Canada flight, also a 319, it turns out. But this was arriving from Toronto. They had a report of a disc-like drone passing within 20 to 40 feet of the aircraft while at 3,000 feet. This is, you know, and it goes on and on. We have some GA reports, a Cessna 172 reports a drone passing 100 feet below the aircraft at an altitude of 1,000 feet. And, you know, these are just not low altitude, all of them, encounters as aircraft are on final approach, coming in close to the runway or just after takeoff. Some of these are at some pretty significant altitudes.
Yeah, which, I don't know, it gets kind of suspicious, but pilots are supposed to know what they see. So that's what they've always said in the UFO world, that, you know, pilots are incredibly gifted observers. So if they're going to report something flashing by them at 6,000 feet, then something flashed by them at 6,000 feet. Yeah. So
we're waiting, of course, in the U.S. for the FAA to issue its proposed regulations. The Government Accountability Office recently took a look at where we stand with that. And what they're saying is not very encouraging.
2017.
Yeah. Now, of course, the FAA was given until September 2015 to establish the regulations that integrate UAS into the national airspace. The Government Accountability Office, if you're not familiar with that in the U.S., they often perform independent analysis of different things and represent or present their opinions based on the data that they see. And I think I get the sense, David, that they're generally a pretty reliable and believable organization.
Well, they're supposed to be the people we trust as far as auditing the government. So, unfortunately, 2017's believable. Unfortunately. We'll see what happens. You know, we've got 3 weeks left in the year. If we get rules out before the end of the year from the FAA for small UAVs, at least starting to get guidelines. So,
there's a start. Well, David, what about a video of the week? I see that you've identified a really, really interesting video.
I like this. A subdivision in American Southwest synced up their neighborhood lights to Trans-Siberian Orchestra's Wizard of Winters and then filmed the whole neighborhood with a drone. It doesn't get any more festival holiday than this. Watching this basically whole neighborhood, couple of streets and synchronized lights going on. Just watch it. It will get you in the holiday spirit. And if you don't get in the holiday spirit, watch it anyway, because technologically I'm more impressed that they have that many neighbors that like each other that were willing to work together to do this.
Yeah, it is quite a show.
There can be peace in the holiday season, especially when it comes to electric lighting.
Yeah, at least in this neighborhood. So yeah, very good.
So let's talk about feedback. We got a feedback from Peter, how to freely operate a commercial or research drone in Canada. And this is another video. And it's a 12-minute video by William Levasseur and talks about the new Transport Canada regulations for commercial UAV operations.
And what William did is he looked at the Transport Canada regulations for commercial UAV operations, and he thought that they weren't really easy to understand just exactly what the regulations were and how they or who they applied to. So he made this video describing it.
And then breaking news comes out, and William writes us, "I wasn't planning on making a second video so soon, but I have to write to tell everybody a second time. I've discovered something important," and this is a major detail.
It sure is. In the first video, and as you'll hear as you watch it, there's this concept of a built-up area, and there are requirements from Transport Canada as to how close you can fly to a built-up area. So William wondered, well, what is a built-up area? What's the definition of that? And in his first video, he didn't really have an answer. But now he's looked into it, and he's found the definition for a built-up area. And it's something that is, well, kind of onerous. You can't fly within 9 kilometers of a built-up area. But according to the Transport Canada, they say built-up areas are, and I'm reading from their I'm reading from the Transport Canada document. Built-up areas are considered areas with groups of buildings or dwellings, including anything from small hamlets to major cities. Anything larger than a farmstead should be considered a built-up area.
So, here in the States, where can you go that's not within 9 kilometers of that description? In Canada, I guess you'll be flying it in the Northwest Territories or up in the Klondike. Kind of narrows your area in which to fly, doesn't it?
It really sounds like it does. So the point of these videos is to, initially provide some encouragement and some information, but ultimately concluding that it's not the changes that Transport Canada came out with, the supposedly opening up the UAV operations for very small UAVs, doesn't seem to offer quite the change that people were hoping, at least not based on this interpretation. So if you're up there in Canada, you may want to take a look at these videos, and I think that will help you understand or at least illustrate the questions that you need to be asking.
So I guess with that, Max, we're going to start running long.
Well, we want to thank all of you for listening to the UAV Digest. This has been episode 72. You can find us at theuavdigest.com. And if you'd like to go straight to the show notes for this episode, which we encourage you to do, you can find those at theuavdigest.com/72.
And of course, we'd love feedback, and we read all of the articles. So it's feedback at theuavdigest.com. Find us on iTunes. And if you love us on iTunes, please leave us a review. You can download us to your phone via Stitcher.com. Of course, we've got swag, and that's at our cafepress.com/theuavdigest site. So go pick up a t-shirt for the holidays. And last but not least, we've got our patrons. We'd like to thank them every week for donating to us to help us chug this little thing around. And we're looking for great things coming up in 2015. And you can find our patron account at patron.com/theuavdigest or go to theuavdigest.com and click on the donate link.
All right, David. Well, I think that's a wrap for this episode.
Agreed. So with that, this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.
This episode has been sponsored by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com.